Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Shuttle Pod. This is episode 13. I'm Brian Drew, along with...
Hi, I'm Kayla.
And this is Jared, as always. Except for that one time when I wasn't on.
Right, of course. Welcome back, everybody. We are going to speak about current events on this podcast. A lot's been going on, as everybody is well aware, over the past couple of weeks regarding Star Trek All Access. We want to begin talking about the bombshell that happened last week that made many a Star Trek fan very happy, was the announcement that Nicholas Meyer would be part of the staff of the new program. He's going to be a consulting producer and part of the writing staff, I believe. And I think it was safe to say that we were all very caught off guard by it.
But in a good way.
Yeah, very pleasant.
Oh, in a great way, absolutely.
To the point where, like, when the thing that this reminded me of was when they announced that Lawrence Kasdan would be writing Episode 7.
Yeah.
Who Lawrence Kasdan did this screenplay for Empire and Jedi, right?
Right.
And so that was their way of taking someone who, kind of an unsung hero in many ways for many years until people became aware of some of the people behind the scenes besides Lucas. And so bringing back Nick Meyer, who, you know, along with Harve Bennett, may he rest in peace, was the creative genius behind Star Trek's 2, 4, and 6, I believe.
Arguably the best ones.
Nick, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I'm just double-checking on his memory alpha page here. Everything that he's done in terms of Star Trek. He was the director for Wrath of Khan, which, of course, is his big claim to fame. And then he co-wrote the screenplay for Voyage Home. And then he directed, and then he directed Undiscovered Country as well.
And Carl wrote Undiscovered Country. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a very talented guy. Not just in Star Trek. Nick has done a lot of stuff. He's a book author. He's a screenplay writer. He's a director. Very gifted guy.
Two Saturn Award nominations and one win, and 3 Hugo Award nominations. And I got to tell you, and we're recording this on March 3rd, so this is the same week as the Oscars this year. I disagree with virtually every award program in the world except for the Hugo Award. And so when I see somebody who's got that, then I my opinion only goes up.
For sure. I think, you know, the biggest part of this is, you know, up and down, he's a great name in science fiction history. But the best part is that he's a big name in Star Trek history specifically.
Yeah.
And that even so many years later, after Wrath of Khan and the others came out, Wrath of Khan is still heralded as the best Star Trek movie ever. And now we get that vision for this new show. And it's part of this ongoing theme of, which we can talk about more a bit later in the show, of the CBS All Access people bringing on people that Trekkies trust, basically.
Yeah.
They're building their street cred really well.
Yeah,
yes,
and
very
it's
much.
Just like the announcement that Brian Fuller would be running the show, the announcement that Nick Meyer will be on the writing staff was equally met with pretty much only positive reaction from the fans.
Yeah.
Which, as we mentioned when we talked about Brian Fuller, is a very unusual thing for the internet. There's always at least one dissenter, especially amongst Trekkies.
Exactly.
We're a very demanding bunch.
And the fact that we're, even on a place like Trek Movie, where the comments can get pretty intense, let's just say, going through the comments section on the article that we posted about the announcement, it's just all positive and everything is saying, this is amazing, the show is going to be so great, they've got my business kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that CBS is watching this reaction and sort of being very pleased with themselves for doing this. And who knows if that will help guide their future decisions in terms of writing staff and casting and things like that.
I suspect it will, right? So far, they're 2 for 2.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I really like about the announcement of both Brian Fuller and Nick Meyer is they're two people from different, pardon the expression, generations of Star Trek. We have someone who's from the TOS movies, and then we have someone who's mainly a Voyager writer.
Right.
I like the variety that we have in that. If they were all from one creative section of the franchise's history, then that wouldn't necessarily be as good as being able to get people from different periods of time.
Right.
Now, and these are just two announcements. It remains to be seen who else will fill out the writing crew. I'm sure they'll get some people who are unknowns. They may get some people who, I don't know. Do you think that they would hire people from, like, fan productions?
I kind of doubt it.
That's an interesting question, though.
Yeah,
if they're good enough, why not?
Yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, Fuller's in his 40s, Nick Meyer's 70. I mean, they want some people in their late 20s in the writing room, right?
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're going to go to a fan production to do it. But yeah, I agree, though. That would be fun. That would be fun, though.
I just hope they go with what Brian had suggested to me earlier, which was Dorothy Fontana.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
It'd be cool, even if she just wrote an episode or something.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
See, and that seems more
she's
likely.
Like she's the last of, like, the creative light from TOS that's alive. Like, you know, so it's like, I would love to see her have, like, one more great, see if she has one more great Star Trek story in her.
I also want to see her, like, guest star as, like, a Vulcan prophetess or something like that.
Ooh, that'd be awesome.
Oh, that'd be cool. That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's got the right look for that,
Doesn't she?
You put the outfit on her, and she would totally be able to pull that off.
Yeah, so hopefully they'll do that. The other person from an old guard who I would love to see involved in some way is someone who is also an Emmy Award-winning television producer in his own right outside of Star Trek, which is LeVar Burton. Right?
I thought for a second there you were going to say Brian Drew.
Oh, Brian Drew. That goes without saying. I had my druthers. Brian
Emmy
Drew.
Emmy Award-winning television producer.
Yes, he is.
That's right.
Right here.
Thank you.
And then if they need a science consult, I am available. Just
very
throwing
good.
That out there.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the future is really geology or Vulcanology.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Right.
There's obvious.
Are you listening, Brian Fuller? Are you listening?
Okay. Anything else on the Nick Meyer front that we want to discuss before we move to the our next bit of news about Star Trek All Access?
Well, Nick did an interview the day after the announcement came about, and while he didn't say a lot, people have seized on one particular thing. He was asked something about, I think, Brian Fuller telling him that his favorite Star Trek movie was The Undiscovered Country, and that somehow that movie is going to inform some part of this new show.
Yeah, I have the quote
what that
here.
Means. Yeah,
yeah, I have the quote
cool.
right here. And he says, "The one thing I can relate to you is that The Undiscovered Country, according to Brian Fuller, is a real sort of taking off point or touchstone for how I guess he's thinking about the direction of the new show. I don't want to be misquoted and I don't want to misquote him, but he's fond of that film. Let's put it that way."
There we go.
Right. And nobody really knows what that means.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it's a lot of fun speculating.
It's fun. You know, yeah, Is it a literal sort of taking off point in terms of where the story is going to start time wise? Is it a taking off point in terms of the characters or any of the setting like that? Or is it more of a tonal taking off point? Like, we're going to follow the same sorts of themes that were tackled in Undiscovered Country.
Sure.
Right. I tend to think that's what it is.
Yeah, probably. But it's fun to speculate.
Oh, totally.
The thing that I would love to see, the setting I'd like to see for the next Star Trek show, and I think, I don't know if I mentioned this last time, or to you guys otherwise, but would be in between Undiscovered Country and Encounter at Farpoint.
Right.
And one of the issues that I would like to see addressed is, how did the Klingons go from being the kind of reasonable people, relatively speaking, that we see in the original series and the original movies to these kind of, you know, crazy warriors that we are introduced to in Next Generation, and that, you know, by the time Deep Space Nine comes around, every single thing that happens in their culture demands suicide or a blood feud or something to the point where, like...
Or pain sticks.
Or the point where it's like, there's no way this society could possibly function. Right? And like, because like in Day of the Dove, the thing that Spock says is, he says the Klingons have, quote, maintained a dueling tradition, unquote. That's it, right? Just maintain a dueling tradition. But by the time, you know, and I love all the Klingon episodes that Ron Moore specifically did, but by the time that gets around, it's like every little thing can get you and your family dishonored for three generations.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Anyway, so I think that would be a cool issue to address, is how did, in the wake of, you know, the ecological disaster of Praxis, did the Klingons retreat to, like, the psychology of a earlier era where they were more, I don't want to say savage or barbaric, but where the warrior aspect of their culture was much more important, and that's how they changed. I don't know. Maybe that wouldn't be interesting to people, but that's something that I've always thought is a big tonal difference in the different generations of how the most popular alien race was portrayed. So it'd be interesting to see an arc for that, some kind of retconning.
So, okay, so I have a question for you then, sort of on top of that. So the Klingons that we ever see in any of Star Trek are typically are the people who are, they do have honor, they're in some kind of house.
Sure.
They have, you know, a little sash or whatever. And Worf goes through this and, like, getting into different houses or whatever. And so maybe the only people who care about, like, the pain sticks and the dishonoring and stuff are the people who are, like, in that elite circle.
Oh, like it's a caste system? Like it's the warrior caste?
Like, yeah, and like the, right, and like the, you know, sort of more pedestrian people they don't care about all of these traditions that, like, you
sure.
know, we see Worf caring about. I don't know.
Right.
Is that,
right.
could that be the case?
You know, there's an episode, maybe I've talked about it before to you guys, it's called Once More Unto the Breach. It's a Deep Space Nine episode, and General Martok says that he was raised in, like, a lesser house, and that he was a civilian laborer on a Klingon ship, right? He wasn't a warrior or whatever. And then the Romulans or somebody attacked. There was a disaster. And in the midst of that crisis, he rose to the occasion, and then he was sort of promoted out of the civilian laborer class into the warrior class. So
okay.
there's kind of,
yeah.
kind of a precedent for what you just said.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's like how one could answer that question like you posed of how could the society function if they all existed that way. Well, the answer could be that right. only the subset of the society actually functions in that manner.
Yeah, yeah. Also, the people we usually see are in the military, right? So it stands to figure they'd
right.
be a little more warrior-esque.
Right.
Huh. Interesting. Good point.
Anyway, yeah. just the thought that popped into my head.
Yeah.
Right. Of course, without knowing what universe this is taking place in,
sure.
It's kind of hard even to, like, it's yeah. so hard to figure out what this is.
yeah.
Like, we have nothing to go on, like, in terms of where it's set. And literally, we don't know what timeline it's in. Is it in a new timeline? Is it in Prime? Is it in the Abrams timeline?
Yeah.
So.
And what century is it set in, and et cetera.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We're totally guessing.
We don't even know for a fact that it's Federation focused.
Yeah. Yeah. In
right.
fact, something that I've thought they might do, I don't know, have we talked about the show Farscape before? The whole idea with Farscape is it's a human astronaut who gets propelled into this other universe, and he's like the only human in the whole show.
Hmm.
So that's something that
right.
I thought might make an interesting concept is, you know, what if only one person from Voyager had been sent to the Delta Quadrant, and that had been the series?
Ah.
Interesting.
If they do something like that. The other possibility is if they do, like, an anthology series, like American Horror Story, where they have the same actors or similar themes, but completely different stories from season to season, and, like, each season is one story. Like, we could see this is a story about young Sulu, and that's just 12 episodes per year, and that's it. And then the next season is entirely on a Klingon ship.
Right.
And that's one series. And then the next series is...
Yeah, that could be fun.
Is this is what Data was doing during the Dominion War or whatever, right? See, because that lets them pick and choose and not say, okay, we're going to have one concept and we're going to stick to it for 178 episodes.
That's true.
Right, right.
That's true.
Right.
So should we talk about the other big piece of news in
yes.
terms of All Access this week?
By all means.
So the
it.
Thing that was announced today is that is two new executive producers for Star Trek All Access. That is Eugene Rod Roddenberry, who is the son of Gene Roddenberry, Great Bird of the Galaxy, creator of Star Trek, and the COO of his company, Roddenberry Entertainment, Trevor Roth. So the two of them were announced as executive producers alongside the three that we already knew about, that's Alex Kurtzman, Brian Fuller, and Heather Caden. So,
what is the significance of that announcement?
Yeah, well, you know, that's kind of a big question, right? I mean, it's unclear, I think, at this point, how involved Rod and Trevor will be in the creative side of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, given that neither of them are television producers, you know, by training,
right.
that, you know, Rod's place in Star Trek is to sort of be the shepherd of Roddenberry's legacy. And he's really
right.
done a great job of that, especially in the last decade or so, where he's really embraced that role that he has, and he's become a really important part of the Star Trek community. And so I see this as a move by Brian Fuller and the others to say, you know, we want to make this connection, this direct connection to Gene Roddenberry and his legacy, which lives on through Rod, and with the help of Trevor. So, I see it more of it as a, you know, another nod to the fans to say, you know, this is we care about the fans and we care about the legacy that Trek has established, and like, which is why they're bringing on all these people who have worked in different eras of Trek, as Jared mentioned. And this is just like another piece of that to say, you know, these people are not only endorsing it, they're part of it.
Right.
And can be a brand ambassador for it in a way that nobody else can.
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
Yes, very much. Very much. Very much. And yeah, and because Rod looks so much like his father, that branding is very powerful.
Yeah, and because his...
Having him be there.
And because his... he didn't have much of a public persona for so long. I think he has stories that he can tell at conventions that we've heard fewer times than the stories that maybe Walter Koenig has.
It's true.
Yeah.
Although, so as we've talked about before, and especially in our last episode, or two episodes ago in the convention episode, that we're just going to have a wealth of new stories. Just like new life is going to be breathed into conventions.
Yep.
We have all these new people. Yeah.
And we'll have access to it in a way we've never had access to anything behind the scenes from Star Trek, right? This won't be, you may be able to hear some interesting stories twice a year at conventions. It'll be, you'll be able to see what people are doing behind the scenes on social media all the time.
And I think all of the people so far announced that are working on All Access are on Twitter. So if you want to go follow them and see what they're up to, not a bad
very
idea.
Cool. Yeah, very good idea. Very good idea. Let's talk a little bit about the movie Trek Nation, which Rod produced and starred in.
Yeah. So yeah, Trek Nation was this documentary that Rod made basically about his quest to sort of discover the legacy of his father. And so he interviewed all kinds of people and sort of wanted to learn about the impact that his father had on people and on the world.
There's a wonderful interview with him and Majel, which I had to have been like the last one she gave before she passed. Where, you know, he's very open and she's very open and honest about some of his shortcomings as an individual and as a father, but how through this process he comes to know him and to love him and appreciate him and forgive him for some things that he wouldn't have been able to before. And it's so personal, right, that some ways you kind of feel bad for it. Like there's one scene where he's talking to Will Wheaton and he says, like, Will Wheaton says, my dad described me at conventions as the son he never had, right? And that's got to be horrible to hear that when you are the son he has, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. It was probably a combination of a lot of different things. You know, Gene, by the time Rod was born, Gene was already well into middle age and probably did not have a lot of patience to be raising a young kid. I mean, Gene was already like, I think 54 or 55 when Rod was born.
Holy cow, yeah.
Yeah, so like I kind of get the feeling that Gene simply was not gonna have the tolerance that maybe a younger parent would have had.
Sure.
With a young kid, maybe that was part of it. I don't know.
Yeah, because at that age, I mean, it's more like a grandfather grandson type of relationship.
Yeah, it really was. Because I think Rod was like a teenager when Gene died, and Gene was already in his 70s, I think. So.
Yeah, he would have been Gene. Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah. So it must have been hard for Rod, because when you're that young still, you don't really get your parents yet. You just don't understand your parents at that point in your life.
No.
And Rod lost Gene before he grew up enough to appreciate who his father was and his relationship with his father, I think.
Yeah. While also simultaneously being the heir to this huge legacy that he couldn't possibly comprehend.
Right. And it was almost impossible to avoid it, too. He is Eugene Roddenberry Jr.
Yeah, yeah. And can you imagine, like, you know, introductions on the first day of college, and he tells his name, right? Well, chances are a lot of people he went to school with knew what that name meant.
Yeah. And he's such a strong resemblance to his father, too, that everything about Rod is wrapped around his father's legacy, for better or worse.
Yeah.
I think he's done such a great job of, like, taking that on and saying, you know, I don't want to say it's his duty to you know, carry on this legacy, but he's taken it on as such, I think. And the fact that he does seem to get, you know, the Trek universe is really cool, and he really seems to jive well with the fans.
Because he,
he talks to everybody at the convention.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he's really open. He's really approachable. Really awesome guy.
Yep.
And he does really cool stuff, and he cares about sci-fi. And like a lot of what Roddenberry Productions does, Roddenberry Entertainment does, is like kickstart these sci-fi projects using cool new technologies and making comics and short films and all kinds of stuff. So he does a lot of cool things.
And he also has that foundation too, doesn't he? That the philanthropic foundation that gives a lot of stuff. Mostly, I think a lot to ocean.
Yeah, because he's a big diver.
He's a big diver, and I know that the Roddenberry Foundation gave a huge endowment to the Long Beach Aquarium, and there's like a lot of aquatic type of programs that they're involved in. So that's really
cool. And if any of you listeners are divers, you can buy official Star Trek uniform wetsuits that Roddenberry sells, and they're pretty awesome. Oh. He has them at conventions sometimes.
I haven't seen those either. Look for it.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Are they appropriate for when you need to perform a mind meld with a humpback whale?
Probably. That would probably be the perfect thing to wear for that.
Personally, I'd rather just wear the robe and the headband myself.
Although, whenever I see that scene in Star Trek IV where Spock jumps in the tank with the whales, I just... That the robe thing he's wearing must weigh like 1,000 pounds when it gets out of the water.
Yeah, because it's gonna be so
like, sopping. It's like a giant, it's like a giant like terry cloth
sponge.
Robe thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like a sponge.
Yeah, and it's huge. It must just I feel like he could probably barely move under that thing.
But you know, he's a Vulcan. He can handle
it. It's true. He has the strength of 10 men.
That's right.
3, Kayla. Anywho. It's actually 3.
Is it actually 3?
Yeah, I somebody would say it if I didn't. I'm sorry. I hate to correct you, but.
Do they actually say specifically it's 3 men?
In the Deep Space Nine episode "Take Me Out to the Holosuite," Cassidy Yates explicitly says a Vulcan has 3 times the strength of a human.
That's awesome. Well done.
That's impressive, Jay.
Yeah, that's encyclopedic knowledge right there.
Thank
you. I just pulled it.
I know you didn't look that up. I know you actually know that.
No, well, in fact, I've closed up Memory Alpha because they keep having those loud ads on and they disrupt the recording process. So yes, that was pure Jared.
Well done. Impressive. Well done.
Thank you. Very kind. Well, and anything else regarding Star Trek All Access?
We've been talking about this, and I don't know if we want to bring it up here or not, but I was speculating earlier today with you two offline about what effect potentially this could have, this All Access thing could have on Star Trek Beyond, which has gone into like total radio silence. We haven't heard anything since the trailer, which is now like, what, 2.5, 3 months ago?
Yeah.
There's been nothing out there about it. Meanwhile, there's like all this flurry of information coming out about the TV show and just so much positivity coming through there. And meanwhile, this other thing, which we should all be very excited about, that's coming out in July.
Yeah. God.
Feels like it's kind of just fallen off a cliff.
Yeah, well, I might argue that it didn't go into radio silence. It never left radio silence. I mean, all we've had is that trailer. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, they really need to step up their, like, social media game or something.
Something. Because, every podcast that we have that we talk about beyond, you know, all of us lament over the fact that we haven't seen anything. No merchandising, no advertising, no news. Yeah, no
script,
Twitter
no
account.
No script details.
Nothing. And you know what? Script details, fine. Like, I know they want to be cagey about it. But give us something.
Yeah. See,
you know, put a graphic out on Twitter. It'll go crazy.
Thing that I think we talked about this before, my hunch had been that they were just holding back to wait till after Star Wars The Force Awakens came out because they knew they obviously would have gotten buried by that. But it's like, it's March, and Star Wars came out 2.5 months ago. So, right, get with it, people.
Yeah, and people have forgotten that Star Trek is coming out. Like, I'll be sitting in the movie theater with a friend and be like, oh man, I wish one of these trailers was a new Star Trek trailer. And they're like, oh yeah, but isn't that coming out like next year or whatever? I'm like,
wow.
Nope, it's coming out in a few months.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh really? And it's like, you were seeing all the other summer blockbusters. You see all the trailers for those in the movie theaters and online. And the Ghostbusters trailer just dropped today. Why have we seen nothing from Star Trek? It's really, it's kind of upsetting. It's like, Paramount, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And CBS is just kicking your butt right now.
Yeah. And Paramount is not in a good way at the moment either. Apparently, they've been talking about maybe bringing on an equity partner with the studio. Like, Paramount has had several bad quarters in a row, I believe, and is not, basically needs help.
They've talked about selling off some of the properties as well.
Oh, interesting.
Or at least people have been speculating about that. I don't know if Paramount's talked about it, but people in the economy world have been saying, well, I wonder if Paramount's going to be selling off some of their properties.
Yeah, I mean, I know that there was a rumor going around that they might merge with DreamWorks Animation, which would be kind of a cool thing, actually. But I don't know. It just sounds like things are not going great over at the mountain.
Mm. Yeah. I hope they get their act together. But, I mean, it's like, who's running the PR for this?
I don't know.
Because there isn't any.
Yeah, and the fact that that trailer, which was universally panned even by the film's writer, is still the only is still the only marketing material of record so far.
Yeah,
it's well, like, there was
guys. You might even put out a cast photo, something, anything.
They
I don't know. Give me a picture of Chris Pine flipping off the camera. Yeah. I don't care anything.
Yeah. Seriously, that's what I mean. Like, just put up make a graphic that says Star Trek Beyond, and then there's like a picture of space and the Trek Delta, and put it up. And if it's official, people will be like, yes, this thing still exists. But
yeah, very strange.
I'm losing faith in them. And like we had talked with, you know, this third movie is coming out. Simon Pegg was the writer, and we got all these great people on it. And we were all like getting excited, and we were like, oh, well, I'm pretty optimistic about it. And then this news about Star Trek All Access came out, and all of a sudden it's like, you know, I feel like that optimism was like me trying to cling to some kind of hope. But with the Star Trek All Access, it's like, I don't even, I mean, I care about the movie still. I don't want to say I don't care about it, but it's almost as if, you know, it's like, oh, the movie, whatever. I'm more excited about All Access now at this point.
Right. Right. It doesn't feel as important as it did 6 months ago before we knew we were going to have a TV show.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, not everything is, we're not all clinging on to the movies now exclusively is the only thing that we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and so, and I mean, even though we did that article about the, and, you know, because it had been reported that Chris Pine may have been signed for a fourth film, that's exactly not the future of the franchise, is continuing in the Abramsverse.
So, and what, I'll ask you guys about this because you're more knowledgeable about these kinds of things. So, he signed for the option to do a fourth, is that correct?
Yeah, he and Zach, both of them.
So, that means he's not like, signed a contract, I'm going to do this movie, what does it mean when it's an option?
So the idea is they lock him in at a lower price tag right now,
right,
before he becomes any more successful. And you know, if it ends up that they don't end up doing it, then they'll pay out some of that to him anyway, right? But the idea is if he takes off, because he's going to be like the love interest in the Wonder Woman movie, and so if that makes him more of a star than Star Trek has, then he may not come back. But if they've already you know, contractually obligated to then he has to.
So the idea, if it's an option, is if we make this movie, you have to do it.
Exactly.
And we'll pay you X amount. And if we don't make it, you still get some money?
Yeah. Well, it's
yeah, there's probably a buyout of some sort.
Wow, that's awesome. I want a job like that.
Well, I want you to have
It's pretty common in both actor and sports contracts. It's pretty common.
Wow. Yeah, I wanna come to work, and they'll be like, so we might ask you to come to work in a month. And if so, we'll pay you this much. And if not, just stay home and we'll pay you anyway. That sounds great.
Yeah, it's a good deal.
But we don't know what's going to happen. Mostly that's just to give the studio cost certainty.
Okay, gotcha.
One way or the other. They know. So that the salary is, like Jared said, the salary is no longer, like, it's not a moving target.
All right. So, I mean, but it doesn't mean pretty much anything in terms of them. There's no guarantee that they're going to make a new movie. It's just, in case they do, they're covering their bases.
No.
They're covering.
They won't know if they're going to make a new movie until they see the box office receipts of the first weekend. But they want to be able to plan out their slate for the next 6 years. So they need to lock people in.
Well, if they don't tell anyone that this movie is coming out, I don't know who's going to go to see it in the opening weekend.
Yeah. Oh, and did you know it's also the 50th anniversary of the franchise?
Is it?
What?
Paramount doesn't know that.
No, apparently not. I do feel bad for the studio in a way. I mean, they had Star Trek completely torn away from them in that, you know, that split 10 years ago, and I don't think the studio ever quite recovered from
it. Sure, but I mean, they don't seem to be good stewards of it in terms of like what we're seeing right now with PR for this movie, because that's half the battle, right, is getting people excited about it.
Yeah.
Creating hype, and that, like you said, all we've had is one trailer that has been universally, you know, disliked by people, including the writer of the movie. So,
And the other storyline in regards to Beyond is what will happen with Bad Robot. Obviously, if they don't decide not to make a fourth film, then the point is moot. But if they decide to go ahead, they have to renegotiate their deal with Bad Robot. Presumably, if they want to keep Bad Robot on it, they're going to have to do that. So that's another separate issue.
And what is the involvement of Bad Robot outside of Alex Kurtzman with All Access?
They have no... Bad Robot has nothing to do with All Access.
Okay, that's what I thought, but I'm...
And Alex doesn't work for All Access. For
Bad Robot. Robot, right. But he's been involved in the other...
Yeah, he's just a con, you know, they hired him as a screenwriter to work on, you know, Star Trek, that's all. He's got, you know, KO Paper Products, and I think he's got his own separate thing from Orchi.
Yeah, the two of them used to be, like, always together, and then they kind of split into their own things a couple years ago.
Right, I mean, they still produce some shows together, mm-hmm. like, on TV, I think Hawaii Five-0 and Scorpion and a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
But Alex is mostly on his own at this point.
Yeah.
But anyway, Bad Robot... It'll be interesting to see what happens there. Will Paramount, if they do decide to continue, will they go on their own or will they continue to let JJ steer the ship? I tend to think the studio is going to walk away. If they decide to go forward, I think they'll try to do it on their own.
Well, the other question is, does JJ want to steer the ship? He's gone to Star Wars at this point, which is
But he's already done with that.
That's true, actually, because he's not doing the next one.
Yeah.
Right. And at this point, he's not going to come back and direct any more Star Trek movies. He would just, you know, supervise them in whatever manner he supervises these things.
Right, and it's still not entirely clear how much supervising he did on Beyond, just considering that he was probably spending almost all of his time doing Star Wars while it was being produced. Yeah. So
if he's focusing on Beyond at all, he's doing it now.
Right, right.
While the film's in post production, because there's no way. He was cutting Star Wars up, I think, right till the very end.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just a matter of him not having the time to do both.
Right.
But he did a great job with Star Wars. God, I love that film.
Oh, that's nice to hear. That's nice to hear.
I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've talked about this before, and I know you guys had your issues with it, and that's fine.
Oh,
I did too.
I mostly enjoyed it.
Me too.
I mostly thought it was great. I mean, I could have used a little bit more C-3PO, but, you know, what movie
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's my favorite character. Always has been.
Really?
Has he
C-3PO has the best line in all of Star Wars. It's when they're in the asteroid, and then we'll close with this because, you know, we've kind of strayed a little off topic. So when they're in that, this will substitute for my Trek anecdote. They're in the asteroid field. They're being chased by the Empire, and he looks at Leia and Han and says, "Surrender is a perfectly viable option. I'm sure the Empire would be gracious enough," and then they turn him off. And it's like, did you literally just suggest we should surrender to the people who are trying to murder us? And I want to know how he was going to finish that sentence. I'm sure the Empire would be gracious enough to what? Give us a stern talking to and send us on our way?
To give us a quick death, maybe? Yeah.
Well, from his perspective, he's just a droid. They'll probably just say, okay, now you're going to be translating for this guy. And he'll say, oh, okay, thank you, Master.
Right.
He still has a self-preservation instinct, though.
And they could dismantle him. No, that's true.
3PO always, if 3PO has anything, it's his self-preservation instinct.
Yeah. I thought you were just being facetious.
No, I love C-3PO.
More C-3PO in the movie.
Oh, and there's that great...
I laughed when he came on. Yes. It's like, oh, you didn't notice me because my arm is a different color. Like, that was funny.
Yeah.
That was
funny.
Enough.
That was funny.
And he ruins the moment where it's supposed to land with Han and Leia. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Vintage.
It was a cute...
He always ruins moments with Han and Leia.
Exactly. That's his thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was super cute, but that was the perfect amount of 3PO for me. It was a good Kienzer ratio, if I might say so myself.
The Kienzer ratio.
Bringing that one back.
Yeah.
I assume we're going to see Kienzer in Star Trek Beyond.
Really? Really?
Yeah. All
right, I'm going to have to write a mathematical formula for the Kienzer ratio so that we can address this when the new film comes out.
That would be fantastic.
And you need to do it, and we need to put it on the internet, and then at some point, that will be an accoutogram on somebody's panel in the background.
That would make my life.
Yeah, and you'll be able to freeze the DVD and zoom in, and you'll say, "Hey, there I am, right
there."
Like,
I made that. Hmm? Copyright, patent pending.
You hear that, Mike Akuda? You hear that, Mike Akuda?
That's right. I have a new Akudagram for you coming up eventually, maybe.
Yeah, I wonder if Mike and Denise are going to be involved in the new show.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be so totally awesome, and I'm sure they would do it.
Yeah, I think so.
They would.
I think we're going to be hearing a lot of familiar names coming up in the next couple of months.
That would be very, very groovy.
That's what we've heard so far.
Cool.
Alrighty. Well, let's...
Lots of exciting times ahead, gang.
Definitely.
Let's put a period at the end of this sentence then and finish another episode of the Illustrious Shuttle Pod.
Yeah, thanks, guys. See you next time.
Thanks, everybody.
Guy walks into the doctor's office. The doctor tells him you need an operation. The guy says, I want a second opinion. The doctor says, okay, you're ugly too, but boom, boom.